Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
It's time to get up and get moving. Workout Wednesday. Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Well, you all have been through maybe a time in your life where you're like, you know what? I'm going to change my eating habits, or I'm going to change my exercise routines. And you know what? The first week, you're like, I'm crushing it. I'm killing it. I lost 7 or 8 or 10 pounds. And you're like, yeah, I'm the best. And you are. You are the best. Don't kid yourself. But then all of a sudden, about 10 to 12 days later, do you notice that it just stops? People say, I plateaued. I have plateaued. I can't tell you how often I hear the word I have plateaued. In fact, I myself have said it. I have heard many of you say it before. So I wanted to talk to Amy Linus this morning about why do we, quote unquote, plateau, and are we actually plateauing? So Amy, of course, our wellness coach is here this morning. Good morning, Amy. Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning, Melissa. Oh, man, that is such a fair question. And so many people, unfortunately, just get derailed by that. Mm-hmm. And it's a simple explanation. So when you're first starting out a new program, you are going to drop 5 to 10 pounds generally in that first 10 days, because a lot of that weight that's coming off of is actually excess water weight, because most of us overconsume carbohydrates. So with overconsumption of carbohydrates, so you have one gram of carbohydrate. Well, 3 molecules of water are attached to that. So imagine if you have way too many carbs, so you're going to have a lot of excess water in your system and holding on to water. That's kind of what happens after, say, like a relaxed meal or a cheat meal. That's why you rebound and you gain like 3 pounds here or there because of the extra water weight. So what people don't realize is if you just taper that back in and bring it back down, you're going to keep moving in the right direction. So yes, weight loss is going to slow down, but that's normal, because anything more than like 2 pounds a week, you're going to be sacrificing some muscle tissue for energy. And muscle is like dense and hard and tight. And it, you know, the more muscle we have, the more calories we burn at rest. So we want to keep as much lean mass on our frame as we can and lose the proper weight.
Mm. So what you're saying, Amy, is that we don't actually plateau.
No. It feels that way because you're losing like so much right up front. And that, man, is that invigorating. You're like, oh, I got this. And it's motivating and you're ready to rock and roll and just continue on. However, whenever it stagnates and slow down, it's actually a good thing, because you're not losing too much. You're not losing too much too fast. You're not damaging your metabolism by not fueling your body with enough nutrients, because that can happen too. If you pull too much food away too fast, then your metabolism is going to slow down as well. So losing that 1 to 2 pounds a week after that initial like flush out of your system is ideal.
Okay. So, Amy, I'm curious, since we can't really plateau, is it normal, though, to go like 1, 2, 3, even 4 weeks before you do start to lose weight again, that 1 to 2 pounds? Like,
yes.
I've heard of people going stagnant, because, where like nothing happens, but they're staying on the routine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And when that happens, I would invite you guys to check out your sleeping patterns. Were you drinking enough water that week? Think about water. Water is like your body's filtration system. So the more water you have in your system, the more optimally all your internal organs and systems are going to run. So I would invite you guys to check out sleep patterns. If you're not sleeping enough, your body's going to hold on to some extra water weight and some extra body fat here and there. That's just normal. It's self-preservation. And then, water, make sure you drink that water like constantly. And then, you know, are you stressed out? Do you have a lot of stressors going on in your life? So there are so many different components you also need to look at when you feel like you're stagnating.
Mm. It's interesting, because you hear about sleep, you know, matters, and are you stressed that matters, but it always sounds like sort of like a cop out, but it really can make a huge difference. That's so interesting.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yes, absolutely. I mean, our bodies are made and meant to survive, so they're going to do whatever they can to survive. So lack of sleep, you're going to be holding on to some extra water weight whenever you're not sleeping, just so your body can function, you know? It's crazy how intricately woven we all are.
it's so true. And, you know, when you see some of those billboards sometimes, Amy, that's like, you can lose 60 pounds in 3 months. I mean, unless you're somebody who is, you know, is considered very overweight, like if, you know, I know of people who are maybe in the 300-400 pound range, and to lose that kind of weight is to them even not enough. But like if you're just, you know, struggling with your weight, if you see something like that, like, hey, you could lose up to 90 pounds in 3 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, should you be concerned mm-hmm. about that? Is that something that's not really attainable after you're done losing the weight?
Yeah, I mean, that's not necessarily realistic or healthy. Could it be done? Yes, it can definitely be done. Almost anything can be done. However, if you want to keep it off and want it to be a lasting weight loss and do it in a very healthy manner, then slow and steady is what's going to win the race, and doing it the right way so that you're not damaging other systems inside your body.
Well, Amy, I know one of the other key ingredients to continuing on sort of the longer journey of living a healthier life, and maybe you lose the weight slower, but you're losing it the right way and maintaining it,
yes.
Is that you're able to use things like vitamins or supplements or different products that can really help in your health journey. Where can people go if they want your advice on things or they want to use your products?
Oh, yeah. Go over to fitbodyvibe.com. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, but our website is fitbodyvibe.com, and we are actually powered by Nature's Answer. We teamed up with them. They are a company that's been in business over 50 years out here in Hauppauge, New York. So please check out our supplements there, and I highly recommend all of them. They are wonderfully made, and I think you'll definitely feel a difference with those, because it's hard to get all the nutrients that you need from food these days, just the way that things are prepared and the way that things are farmed. So it's super important to make sure that we're taking in all those micronutrients that we also need.
Yeah, absolutely. Amy Linus, our wellness coach for Workout Wednesday. Thank you so much for always being here. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Melissa. I just love talking with you in the morning. And if anybody else has any questions or anything, tell them, feel free to look us up.
Absolutely. Amy, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. You too. Senate Republican leader Kevin Kelly, who's here this morning. Good morning, Senator Kelly. Thanks for coming by.
Good morning, Melissa. It's always great to be on the show.
I feel the same way about having you on. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know it was big news earlier this month that the GOP put together some new plans to address really the huge spike we've seen in violent crimes across Connecticut. It's happening everywhere. I know that some people will say only in the inner cities. That's just not true. And it sounds like you guys have put some thought into this, have put some proposals forward. Can you give us just kind of some highlights? What are some of the things you guys are looking at?
Well, first and foremost, Melissa, what we did was once we saw this uptick in crime, we took to the streets. Rather than talk to our colleagues under the Capitol Dome, we wanted to talk with stakeholders, which included, you know, not only the prosecutors and public defenders, but social workers and nonprofits and community activists to see what is it that needs to be done in our communities to try and make sure that not only do we address the current rise in crime, but then also address and put in place building blocks so that kids have alternatives to a life of crime. And how do we make sure that that's a bona fide, real opportunity, and what are the steps that are needed to do that?
Mm-hmm.
So we looked at first the criminal justice system. We looked at things like making sure that if somebody is arrested, they get into court the next day so that we can begin the corrective behavior by giving them the wraparound and necessary services. Many times youths are left in what's known as the youthful offender docket, which doesn't have as many services and supports as the adult court. So let's utilize the adult court to provide the services to make sure that they have what they need to correct their behavior in the first place.
So
that's the first step.
So let's talk about that just for a second. So the difference between the two, you know, is it's vastly different if they were to go to adult court versus juvenile?
Well, it could be. And that's one of the concerns that we had, was that when youth would come into the adult court, they would have all the protections that they have normally in the youth docket. That's kind of a diversionary program from adult court. And what we wanted to do was to bring them in, keep all the protections you have as a youthful offender, but then make them or provide them the opportunity to get more and better services. And that's really what we're looking at, is how do we correct behavior? If this is a first-time offender, maybe somebody who just stole their first car, let's not make them a hardened criminal for life. Let's give them the support that they need. The second part of this is looking at exactly that, is when something happens and there's a trauma at the event, Well, let's start looking at the trauma and truancy that are linked, but also making sure that a social worker gets out there to look at mediation and mentorship to make sure that anybody that was affected here by what happened, that we don't have either retaliatory crime or that individuals learn how to process and deal with this. And then also looking at, well, let's make these neighborhoods safe. Let's hold landlords accountable. Let's look at making sure that if an LLC owns a piece of real estate and is a landlord, that the tenants know who they are. Let's make changes to Section 8 and hold our cities accountable. You've seen in the city of Bridgeport with public housing. Let's make sure that the cities have the accountability to make sure that those public housing projects are safe and secure. Because after all, if we believe in our community and have pride in our community, guess what? We're going to take care of our community. Mm. And that's what we need to do, is make sure that these wraparound services are there, as well as a pathway forward. You saw the governor last week came out and said that manufacturing jobs on average pay almost $100,000 a year. That's real money. That's a good job. Mm-hmm. That can buy a house, keep a community strong. Why aren't we doing more with our VOTEC and giving these kids the opportunities and exposure at a young age to these types of jobs? Because we've got them, you know, at Sikorsky, Electric Boat, Pratt & Whitney. We've got manufacturing in Connecticut. Let's start to utilize that to give kids an opportunity that's just as valuable, if not more so, than a life of crime.
So, Senator Kelly, I wanted to go back to just a couple of things. We're talking about some of these new proposals having to do with crime, if you're just tuning in. You had mentioned that you would love to see, after, you know, somebody commits a crime, that social workers are then brought in to talk to the party or to anyone who has been traumatized, because you don't want counter revenge to happen, or you don't want the same things to go on right now. So could you clarify for me? Right now, when you talk to a police officer, on average, and I have them on constantly on this show, they basically say it's like a slap on the wrist. They see police, they're arrested, and they're basically released in the custody of their parents. Nothing really happens. Maybe they do a court date, but that's about it. So social workers at this point, unless it gets to be a big deal where, God forbid, someone is killed or something awful, like really awful, happens, most times social workers don't even have records of these kids that have had any offenses. Correct or no?
No, you're absolutely correct, and the social worker aspect here is more of a long term. We saw that when we talked with advocates and stakeholders that trauma would lead to truancy. There were key built like indicators of mm-hmm. what sets people off,
right?
And so people who witness these crimes often turn to revenge and retaliation. And so you want to start to begin that healing process. And truancy from schools is an area that is also an indicator of criminal behavior. So we want to keep our fingers on this and look at that and make sure that we kind of nip that in the bud. As to repeat offenders, you're mm-hmm. right. I mean, there are individuals who just get slapped on the wrist and moved on. That's why we're looking at next day. You get arrested, we're not just going to put you right back out on the street. And that's what's happening right now.
No
and many
question.
Times people are not getting before a judge for a month. And in that interim, they're engaging in the same behavior because they don't have the proper supports in their life. They're behaving in retaliation, retaliatory behavior. And so what we want to do is, persons arrested, get them before a judge, get them connected with the services that the state can provide. And we also have to evaluate the state services to make sure those get better. But we need to get the person connected to the support systems that they need, mm-hmm. because obviously they don't have the proper support currently, and make it so that it's not just a slap on the wrist and return back to the community.
First and foremost, Senator Kelly, can we actually just go back a real quick second to something before these plans came out that consistently was said by the opposite side of the aisle? The Democrats have continued to say that Connecticut is still one of the safest states, which, fair, we are, I guess, compared to the rest of the country, and that the Republicans are trying to scare people. I think half of that statement is true. Okay, so we are safer than, say, other states. Fine. But I mean, when you say that you guys are trying to scare the rest of the public, I think that, to me, as a resident in Connecticut, I think that's baloney when people say things like that. So I just didn't know sort of your take on that statement that has consistently been said, I feel like, for months now.
Well, it's unfortunate that the other side, you know, says that we're trying to scare people when actually what we're doing is trying to save our kids. And, you know, we can take data any way you want. And what, you know, the majority's looking at doing is comparing Connecticut to the rest of the country. And on that note, yes, we're, I guess, you know, number four. However, when you compare Connecticut to Connecticut, and we all live here, we choose not to live in places like Chicago because
right.
they're dangerous.
Right.
We choose to live in Connecticut because we want the lifestyle of Connecticut. We want the Connecticut we all know and love. And when you compare Connecticut to Connecticut, and in specific things like Hartford to Hartford or New Haven to New Haven, you come away with some very disturbing data.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 16% of our population lives in the communities of Hartford, New Haven, Bridgeport, Stamford, and Waterbury. Yet over one-third of all crime occurs in those communities. And that's disturbing because it's disproportionate, and it deserves a response. You can't sit back and say, oh, that's okay because it's in that neighborhood. No, it's not okay.
Right.
And when
right.
you see
that, how do you tell that? How do you say that to a mom and a father who lose their child to crime? You know what I mean? How do you say to them, oh, it's okay because you're not in Chicago. At least your child passed here and not in Chicago. You know what I'm saying? It's just ridiculous. It's lunacy.
And it's, you know, you look at, you know, there's a 61% increase in murders in mm-hmm. Hartford. There's a 42% increase in car thefts statewide. There's a 122% increase in shots fired in New Haven. 122, that's 245 gunshots occurred this year alone in the city of New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if, you know, that's the fourth best in the country.
Right.
That's still 245
still
bullets were fired.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you got to think about, well, what's the cost, too? If, you know, obviously if somebody passes, it's a horrible cost, but many folks don't. And then
right.
you end up, and that's a cost to our medical system. So this is an issue that needs to be looked at. It's not what Connecticut normally enjoys, and people in Connecticut have a right to feel secure in their homes and have a peaceful neighborhood. But when you see what's going on, and you know, kids getting shot in car seats, moms cooking dinner in their kitchen getting shot by a drive-by,
mm-hmm.
or somebody just out for a jog gets run down by a stolen car.
Right.
These are not, you know, people who are looking for trouble. These are just people going about their daily life, going to a grocery store or an ATM machine or a gas station, and all of a sudden encountering a carjacking or an abduction. And,
mm-hmm.
and there's no place in Connecticut, regardless of how we compare it to other states. It's no place for it in other states either, but we live here.
Right, but this is our state.
And people in Connecticut.
Right.
Expect more.
So, Senator,
and we're offering it.
So, Senator Kelly, I know that the next legislative, it's you guys are supposed to kind of get back together in February. Have there been any rumblings that you guys could have a special session on this? Like, I think it's interesting that we're willing to wait till February when this seems like it's top of mind for both sides of the aisle.
You're right. We started asking for this in the summer.
Right.
And actually, the last special session, we were pretty clear and vocal that we needed to do this, but it fell on deaf ears. Whether or not it has any resonance between now and February, we don't know because we don't have the votes. We need more Republicans and more like-minded individuals that in the General Assembly that would mm-hmm. think this way, that would believe that public safety and safety and security of our neighborhoods is important to get this on the agenda. But you know, when we get back into session, obviously, the Republicans are going to push forward these initiatives to make sure that they get into law to give people what they rightly deserve.
Senator Kelly, I still have so much more I want to talk to you about on this, and I'm hoping I can have you back on the show really soon to keep diving into this matter. Thank you for bringing it to the forefront and for talking about it on the show. I appreciate it.
You bet. I'd love to come back.
All right, great. I will text Adam right after the show. Thank you so much. I appreciate
Take
it,
care.
70 Kelly.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio is on the Lissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Well, the story this week is that we now officially have online gambling and sports betting available to everyone across Connecticut, and that includes retail. And my understanding, Dan, from the very beginning was there was going to be a betting location in Bridgeport, at least one. Do you have details on that this morning? Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, so the exciting news for those who enjoy online betting and gambling, if you're in Connecticut or even traveling through Connecticut, I think they're using GPS to monitor folks. They launched yesterday online sports betting. The retail locations haven't been approved yet by the Department of Consumer Protection, but you're correct that cities like Hartford and Bridgeport will have a retail location that's going to be operated by the Connecticut Lottery, which is different, right? I think if you go across the country and you look at these sports betting facilities, you know, typically they're operated privately. It doesn't mean that they won't be here in Connecticut, but they're going to be overseen and perhaps sub-managed through the Department of, the Connecticut Lottery System. So, yeah, exciting times. I think Connecticut's a leg up right now because states like Massachusetts and New York haven't quite launched theirs yet. So I think we're going to see some ancillary benefit from folks just across the border, you know, hopping into Connecticut to place their bets. So it'll be helpful. And the way it works is, right, the online sports bets will get taxed, and that'll go into the state coffers. You know, how much exactly we'll see from that, I guess, remains to be seen since it's all relatively new. But if any indication when the casinos first opened, if that's an indicator for us, you know, I think we'll see some really good revenue coming from the online gambling as well.
I remember in the beginning when we knew that they were going to have retail locations and that one was going to be in Bridgeport, there were a few assumptions of where it could be. Do we have any clarity on that this morning, Dan? I know you just mentioned we haven't heard for sure, but any rumblings, anything your offices have heard where that location could be in Bridgeport?
Yeah, I get that question often, and honestly, I don't. You know, it's mum's the word around town. I haven't heard too much in terms of potential locations. I think we all can speculate where.
I mean, I was going to say, like, yeah. Are you thinking like sport? And not that you're making the decision. I want to make that very clear. Dan is not making the decision where this location will be. But I just know you're very involved with the local businesses there. Like, do you think it would be more like a sports bar location? Do we think it would be a brand new location? Like, do you think it at least be in a current business, or are we going to create a brand new space for it, I guess, essentially?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it depends on how they partner up. You know, it'd be great if they can partner up with an existing business. However, you know, we'll see. You know, I think what we just got to keep reminding people is, you know, this isn't going to be a mini casino, right? It's not like you're going to see tables in there and stuff
right. Like
that. And, you know, it is truly a, you know, just a retail place to be able to place your bet. So I guess we'll see how the model looks, you know. And like I said, I think Connecticut has up to 15 locations that they can set up. And we're just waiting now for the Department of Consumer Protection to kind of officially approve it. And then I think they'll start vetting out locations.
We're talking to Dan Onofrio this morning of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. Some other big news actually in Bridgeport this week, Dan. It got the final stamp of approval from the city council. The Sound on the Sound Music Festival is going to be coming to Seaside Park as of next September. I know this was a huge endeavor. We had Howard Saffin on the show to talk about it. It was something he and some of his, I would say, big business partners were pushing to have come back. There's not going to be any overnight camping happening, so it should be a lot safer than in the past. But it does look like, at least what's being projected by the city council, this is going to bring in some money to Bridgeport.
Oh, for sure. You know, anytime we can bring people in from in and around the region, or even from out of state for that matter, is a good thing. You know, it benefits, obviously, local businesses, and it, you know, it gets Bridgeport on the map for a lot of people that typically just drive through on 95. And gosh, you know, we've got these great assets like the Sound and Seaside Park and that whole area. you know, when people come, I take sometimes out-of-towners that come in from Long Island or New York, you know, vetting out properties. You know, we usually stop down by the Seaside Park, and they're always amazed. They're like, wow, this is beautiful. And it is. And, you know, we're called the Park City for a reason, you know. So I think it's an opportunity for local businesses, again, just like the amphitheater and just like the arena, when folks are coming in from out of town, you know, if we can put on our best foot forward and really take advantage of the visitors coming in. And, you know, having great music is always a great thing. I think we saw that this summer. You know, so it's going to be an exciting time for the city of Bridgeport and the region.
And understandably, Dan, I can understand from some of the, I would say, failures in the past when they had these festivals at the park. Unfortunately, especially when they would have like the camping out and things like that, that's when there was a lot of drug issues. There were a lot of injuries, a lot of arrests that went on, which is why essentially it went away. Right. It became kind of a problem child for Bridgeport. And this new model without camping is hopefully going to make a huge difference. But I'm curious if you think taking away the ability to be able to camp on the grounds there, do you think that will keep people from wanting to come, as in like only Connecticut residents, or do you think it kind of opens up opportunities for people to look for local hotels or look for other local spots to go to? Like, do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that they're taking that element out?
Well, I think it's a good thing. You know, if you keep things simple, right, it tends to be, you know, better managed and better operated, and the experience overall is just simple. When you start adding in, you know, logistics around, you know, sleeping, camping, and all this other stuff, it adds just a whole other element of you know, from an operational perspective. And as you pointed out, you know, safety. You know, I saw with the amphitheater, you know, folks were coming in and calling us saying, hey, you know, where can we stay overnight? You know, so people do come in from out of town and stay for a day or two if they're following a particular show or a band. So I suspect the same thing will happen here. I do think that the hotels in the area will see some lift from the event. And of course, again, I think the local restaurants and other businesses will have an opportunity to market themselves to people that just don't typically come into Bridgeport. You know, of course, it all depends on the types of acts they get. But, you know, I think we saw this summer, we're going to see some really good shows next year with the amphitheater. And I suspect we'll see some great lineup in September.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Dan Onofrio of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Melissa. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.